Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. My name is Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today, this is a treat. I am joined by Maria Foy, who I've been following on Instagram for many years. Maria is a wife, she's a mother, a sister, a daughter, she's a social media professional. She's a content creator, a very good one, and she is sober. Hi, Maria.
Hey, Lotta, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good. It's so nice to meet. It's so funny, isn't it? You feel like you know somebody. You probably heard this a lot, but you feel like you know someone because you follow them on socials. But
it's nice to meet like this.
Yeah, that's right. We haven't actually met before. And oh, my gosh, when I first heard that you were sober, I was just so happy because firstly all the cool people are sober
and I agree.
Secondly, it just you know, it's something that you can drop into your content and kind of normalize, I suppose. So firstly, how long has it been since you last had a drink?
January 2020. So, okay, pre-pandemic basically, just at the beginning of that year, I had a bit of a revelation. Well, one of many.
Right. So how did that go? So what was your drinking like? What was your kind of habit like?
So I would say that I was pretty much raised like a normal New Zealander, and that's not normal now. I know that should never be normalized that in that way. But, you know, wasn't encouraged to drink as a teenager at home or anything like that. But I kind of entered the workforce when I was young, when I'd finished high school. I was 17 and, you know, worked for an engineering kind of company, and engineers are big drinkers, and kind of got into that rhythm. I wouldn't label it as a problem by New Zealand standards, but it probably was a problem. You know, normal drinking on the weekends, that sort of thing. And it wasn't really until I became a parent that it started spiraling. And I obviously, it didn't happen overnight. It took about 8 years to happen, but it was definitely a spiral. And that kind of stemmed from, you know, I couldn't wait to be a parent. I didn't really have any direction in my life about what I wanted to do or wanted to be, but I felt like if there was going to be one thing I was going to be good at, it was going to be parenting. So I had a baby and that wasn't what I was good at. It took me by surprise. I got really stressed. I got postnatal depression. It was hard. Parenting was just really hard. And you know, that glass of wine that after I'd finished breastfeeding, that glass of wine at the end of the day helped me relax. Made me feel like I was relaxing. And over the space of 8 years, went from something that was probably okay to something that was not okay. And yeah, there's a lot of embarrassing things that happen along the way, and totally, totally happy to go into that. But it was like, I got to a point where I knew I was getting emotional all the time. I was drinking every day to try and survive that 3 to 7 spot, because I struggled so much when the kids were little. I started using alcohol as a crutch basically to get myself through. I know better now, but that's what I was doing basically. And because we build up a tolerance to alcohol, you need more alcohol to keep that feeling going. And it's just this downward spiral, you know. And
you're so right though, also I think in what you're saying about it being kind of normalized and presented to us while we're growing up and the world we live in, of like, this is what you do, this is the thing that adults do. And the bottom line is it works in the moment. It does what you want. You have a stressful day, you're emotional with the baby, things aren't what you expected, your body hurts, you're this and that, you drink a sip, and then it does what you want in that moment. So that's the powerful hook. Yes, society's telling us, but also the drug works, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what keeps us hooked, is that we know it's going to work. But unfortunately, that one glass of wine a week on a Friday turned into two, turned into three, not three glasses in one night, but, you know, three nights a week. And then before I knew it, I was drinking every night of the week. This is, again, not over like 6 months. This is over like 8 years. And that tends to be from what I've read, is a lot of people, it's not overnight. This kind of thing doesn't just happen overnight. It's definitely long exposure to it. And before I knew it, you know, I was waking up the next morning, I would definitely say I was probably like a high functioning alcoholic. You know, like people didn't know I had an issue. I wouldn't drink to get drunk or anything like that. It was just to get that feeling. And obviously you had to drink more to keep that feeling. But the next morning I would wake up and I would feel guilty and I would convince myself that I wouldn't drink tonight. And then by 2 o'clock, I'm like, ah, I've had a hard day. I'll drink again tonight.
Okay. So let's talk about that, because what you're describing there is that inner dialogue that no one can see and no one can hear. But if you live with it, you know, you wake up in the morning, and it could be 3 a.m., 6 a.m., whatever, and it just starts up, right? Right? That every horrible morning. Yeah. And actually, so
I just wanted to say super quickly, I actually Googled it, because I kept waking up at 2 o'clock every morning, and this is prior to becoming sober. And when I Googled it, it said that you're probably waking up at 2 o'clock every morning because your liver that processes the alcohol. Your liver is like done so much it wakes you up because you're drinking too much alcohol. And I was like, oh, I don't need to know that. That's just confirmation.
Right. Because so, because you didn't want to stop.
Yeah, well, because my body was like, every morning it would be, okay, I'm done processing the alcohol now, a time to wake up. And my mind would be, a million miles now. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
So how long did you go, do you think, with that kind of awareness that you know, I don't want to use the word problem necessarily. It's up to you to say that. But how long did you go on with that inner dialogue of the guilt and the awareness before you actually got to the point of stopping?
A few years, for sure. A few years. Like, I had a few niggles in the back of my head that maybe this is an issue. And I would talk about it with people because that's what I do. I'm always very open and honest about how I feel. And the people around me encourage me that I don't have an issue. And even though I was worried about it, it's still... it was never like fully gone from my mind. And then that kind of just stayed there and just got worse. And so then I started getting the guilt. I started feeling guilty every morning and that cycle. So.
And when you imagined quitting, was that scary or was that exciting?
No, it was scary. A lot of my friendships were, like we say, they're not based around alcohol, but a lot of the fun times that I'd have with my friends were around alcohol. You know, going away with my girlfriends for the night and drinking and then also the sort of relationships I'd built online around the drink at five to relieve the mum pressure, you know, that whole narrative. And
so you were showing that on your
I was partaking in that horrible space, and I feel guilty for it. I know better now, but absolutely. I look back on memories that come up on my social media and I'm, you know, let's have a drink at five, or
I deserve this. Yay.
Yeah, they call them the mummy wine time memes and stuff like that. Like, totally inappropriate. And I look at it now and I feel so completely differently. But I was 1,000% in that enabling space back then.
So that was another scary thing about quitting, I suppose. If it had become part of your online identity, you know, and you were going to lose that, what did that mean for your work and your portrayal of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So that part of it, I had slowly stopped talking about my alcohol consumption because I was aware of what it looked like. Every night drinking is probably not something I'm going to be talking about on social media, but I'll certainly post a meme that says, you know, if you're having a hard day, sure, have a glass of wine. And I knew that people connected with me on that level. Like, they could come to me and say, I've had a hard day, I'm going to have a glass of wine. And I'm like, you know what? I've got a glass of wine too. Cheers. So I would absolutely enable that without realizing what I was doing, you know.
And we don't want to run it down too badly because, you know, it's about connection, and it's an easy, fast way to connect with other mums because parenting is hard and, you know, everyone's doing it. But, you know, I suppose it's just part of that thing of, like, we're blind to it almost because it is so normalized. So what got you to quit finally? What, when you had your last night of drinking or whatever it was, what occurred that you made that final decision?
So I had two moments. The first moment was in March of 2019, and I had been having these thoughts for a while. I know that my drinking habits are bad. I know that they're not good. I don't want to talk about it. But then one night, I don't know what I was doing. I was definitely having a glass of wine, and my husband sat down next to me and I just blurted out, I think I've got a problem. And he said,
I got shivers.
Yeah. And he said, I know you do, but I've been waiting. I've been waiting to get to that moment. I know.
So powerful.
He knew that I had an issue, and he didn't want, he knew that there were times when he couldn't approach me to talk to me about it. He didn't know what to do, bless his soul.
It's tricky.
And he knew that I was very self-aware. So he knew, thank God, he knew that I was going to come to a point where I was going to realize. I think he hoped I would. And I did. And I got to that point, and it was like a few hours of crying I had, where I just got super emotional and let it all out. And I decided, that's it, I'm going to go sober. And I did. I stopped drinking for 3 months. but then I went.
How was that 3 months?
It was great. It was, I started reading, and my second bout of sobriety was when I really, not I took it seriously, but I,
yeah,
it was different. But the first time around, I knew I had an issue. I knew that I was going to have to stop, but then it wasn't like I didn't put a timeline on it. I was like, I'm just going to stop drinking because I know I've got a problem. So when I went overseas, I went to Germany to visit my sister for a month. My husband even said, you know, just see how you go. Don't, you know, no pressure. Don't feel like you have to drink. But if you're in a social situation, don't. And so I did start drinking again. And so that was unfortunately a bit of a slippery slope. And I ended up back into my old habits, of course. And so my second and official bout of sobriety came in January of 2020. I'd gone through New Year's. I'd gotten really drunk New Year's Eve. I wasn't proud of myself. I wouldn't say I did embarrassing things, but, you know, I don't like waking up hungover. It's not, even though I'd been drinking for a long time, waking up hungover was not something I was used to. It didn't happen as often as some people might think when you say you've got a problem, because I was high functioning. I was able to just do enough to not have that effect the next day. But there were definitely times when I did and I didn't mean to. But January 1st, 2020, the whole day was a write-off. 2 days were a write-off, because the older you get, the worse it is. And I downloaded an ebook. I started reading it. It was a sobriety book. And I, again, glass of wine in my hand, sitting in a chair reading this book, and I just couldn't stop crying. And I was like,
what was the book?
It was We Are the Luckiest by
Laura McKeown. Yeah.
And I might not have related to her specifically. Her journey with it is a bit different from mine, of course.
Sure.
But there were things that she said that just were huge trigger points for me. And so I don't know what my husband was doing. He came back, he saw me crying, and it's time I stopped drinking again. And we had another moment. And I've never really looked back from there. I said, right, that's it. I'm going to commit to a year. Because I was in denial a lot about being labeled an alcoholic. I still don't know if I would say I was. That's
wrong. You don't have to. Like, it's just a word.
It is just a word. And
it's so loaded. It's like, and it comes with all these out of date connotations.
I completely agree.
You don't have to use it at all.
Completely agree. And I also read Holly
Whitaker's
Quit Like a Woman.
Yep.
That empowered me a lot, and I got a lot of empowerment from that, and not using the word alcoholism because
she's feisty as hell.
But she made me angry. She made me angry for females about what's happened to us. I was so angry.
I
just knew that I needed to take a serious break from it, and I didn't want to. What I wanted to do, I didn't want to give myself an out, but I wanted to give myself an opportunity to perhaps heal the relationship with alcohol. And without knowing any information behind it, this was just my first thought, was 1 year sobriety. And then I started reading, and then I got angry. And then I started learning about all the things to do with alcohol in our society. And I felt all the range of emotions, and I just couldn't imagine going back to that ever. And embracing it,
so empowering,
and enabling it. I mean, from the moment I admitted that I needed to be sober, was the last time I ever gave thought to sharing anything alcohol related. And I mean, I had stopped a while ago, but I'd certainly take, because, you know, I've got a large enough social media audience. I get PR packages from time to time, and some of them were alcohol related, and I had to be like, no, no more now. I can't do this anymore. And I talked to my agency and I was like, look, I think this is the end of my relationship with alcohol. So none of that anymore. So I made a definite line in the sand in that area.
I'm interested in talking about what's occurred for you in terms of your work online since you quit drinking. But before that, is there anything surprising that you learned about yourself since you quit? Because if I could, for me, I thought I was an aging party girl whose habit had got out of control and I just needed to kick the bucket and learn how to, not kick the bucket, kick booze out and learn how to live without it and have fun without it, et cetera, et cetera. And what I discovered when I quit was that I was actually an emotion avoider who'd spent her whole life trying not to feel, and particularly for me, trying not to feel sad, and that I had a huge sadness inside of me, that I'm naturally a very watery person and I didn't want to be that, and that's what I'd been trying to avoid, and that's been a big job for me in recovery, and now I actually love that part of me. So that's just me, but was there anything for you that was surprising, or not, it might not have been, but was there anything that came up that you weren't expecting?
So I am not in therapy, and I know I should be in therapy. So there's probably a lot of things that I haven't discovered about myself that I need to unpack in therapy. So when I think about what I discovered about myself when I went sober, I think if anything, I sort of discovered that I was quite capable of doing things without alcohol, without needing that, because alcohol was my support system, you know.
Yeah, it
was
liquid courage. I mean, that's
absolutely. And I was a nervous person, and I felt anxiety all the time, and I worried about everything. And I felt like alcohol helped me stop doing that. It didn't. I know better than that now, but it definitely made me feel like I was a better person with it. And I know that's not true now. And I'm like yourself, I'm actually a super sensitive person. And I probably was using alcohol to mask that 1,000% to stop those emotions from getting into here and into here. And so now I feel like it's okay to feel like this. It's okay to feel nervous. It's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel all of these emotions. You know, I have other coping mechanisms now that, and I know that they're actually helpful.
Yeah. It takes a while to build them up, eh? And they're more subtle. That's the other adjustment. Alcohol, you know, instant.
Relief.
Whereas these other coping mechanisms, they're much more nourishing and genuine and effective, but they are more subtle.
Yeah, absolutely.
They do a gentle kind of self-care feeling. Yeah. So that's one of the adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't lull you into a false sense of security, which is what alcohol does. It makes you feel like it's helping you, but actually it's 1,000% not. And it's not even about how you feel. It's about what's happening inside your body. What it's doing to your body is actually not good for it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean we both know this. It's a poison, for crying out loud.
It's a poison. It's toxic. It causes cancer. Like, the science is unequivocal. Yeah. It is a madness how we're living. Yeah. And we will look back at this time of saturation with alcohol and marvel at it. Like we do cigarettes. We go, people smoked on the bus and at the movies. It will be like that, but we've got a way to go. Anyway, let's not get sidetracked into that, because
I could talk about that for hours.
But I'm interested in what's occurred for you, because you did start. Tell us what happened when you started talking about being sober through your normal channels.
I feel like it takes a lot of courage to admit to people, and it takes a lot of courage to admit to strangers, especially online. And when I did, I was obviously I had a bunch of people support me, but I also had people who were upset and angry at me. And I can look at that now for what it is. That's their problem and has nothing to do with me. But they got angry at me because they felt that I was betraying them by becoming sober, that I was their ride or die with drinking because we'd formed that relationship online, even though I didn't know them. But they also felt, because I'd gone sober, that I might become a sobriety channel and just preach about being sober and about how alcohol is terrible. And I was like, that's not what I want to do. I just want to be honest with you guys about how I feel. But even though it was only a handful of people, that handful of people can really bring you down. And so I didn't talk about it as much as I should have, for sure.
Well, there's no should. I mean, you don't have to do anything.
No, and the thing is that when you do talk about sobriety, it is confronting, because I remember being confronted by friends of mine that had gone sober, and I was like, I actually want to hear this, because it means I might have a problem, and I did have a problem.
Yeah.
And that is the issue, is that there's a lot of people out there that are like, well, you know, I can have a drink every night and I'm fine. It's like, that's not actually okay. That's having a drink every night is actually not normal. You in New Zealand, it might be normal, but by, you know, scientific standards, you shouldn't be having a drink of wine every night. It's not good for your body. It's not seven drinks a week. It's not good for your body, especially as a
female. And also people aren't aware often their one wine might actually be three standard drinks or whatever.
Exactly.
But I think you're right about that sort of fine line between, there will be some people that always just find it confronting. And I get that too, obviously, because I'm very open about it. But there's a really fine line. I mean, I went out of my way for so many years, and I kind of still do, to make sure that drinkers didn't feel bad around me. Like, you do you. This is just me, and this is my story. And all of the sharing and all of the media and all of the everything I've done, I've really always just tried to talk about myself and not be judgy. But, you know, like I said, you're right. It's more about that person, but you don't want people not to like you. So I mean, you're kind of stuck in this place.
I know, because you want to hold a space open for people to have a conversation, and that's what it's about, right? Is that I don't judge you for drinking, but this is my journey, and I don't. If you feel bad about it, maybe we should talk about it. Maybe you should look into it a little bit more. But you don't want to have that hard line that says like, people who drink are terrible, because that just cuts off any conversation you can possibly have with someone. And in your space, I would imagine that is the total opposite of what you want to do.
Yeah, and the truth of it is, I mean, you're right, one drink a night is too much. But there are people who can moderate alcohol and have a very casual relationship. They're still putting a toxic carcinogenic drug in their bodies.
Absolutely.
But my husband, for example, you know, he could have a glass of wine and then leave the bottle in the fridge for 2 weeks until he has another one. And so that is, you know, non-problematic if you're looking at the scale of addiction. So that's the kind of weird thing about this drug. But those of us who are open and have followers or people who, you know, in talking about it, there is a line. So where are you at now with that,
with what am I talking
with
about
sharing,
right?
Again,
I don't share about it as much, purely because it's not really on my mind anymore. Sobriety's not, like, me being sober is like the smallest part of who I am. You know, we were kind of talking about that earlier. It's just this for me now. I do talk about it every now and then if I see someone with a large following, which I sadly saw the other day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, saying, look at me, I'm amazing, I'm having a glass of wine. And I thought, no, I'm not, that's not on my watch. I'm going to, like, I don't like to, you know, push the bee's nest. I don't like to stir the pot or anything, but sometimes I see things and I think, oh, I can't let that one go. So I will talk about it. And like today, I just talked about us having a conversation and I shared part of my journey in a blog, but I don't often share that. Again, there's still a part of me that's hesitant to do that, because it is a confronting topic. Because I think a lot of people wonder, do I have a problem? And like you said, that one glass of wine a week is fine for some people, but for others, especially if they've gone through something and they're using it as a tool to make themselves feel better, it's just a really slippery slope. A slow slope.
Yeah. But you don't have to lead with that. You don't have to make it the thing that you're all about. You can just quietly live your sober life and occasionally do whatever, you know. Not everyone needs to be open, and a lot of people keep it very private, and that's cool too. Like, whatever keeps you well. So where are you at now with being sober? Do you have cravings ever, triggers? How are you?
I'm pretty good. There's definitely times when, like, on a sunny afternoon on a Saturday, you know, the kids are playing outside and I think, you know, what would be really nice right now is like a cider out on the back deck. And yeah, I haven't actually fully committed to, I mean, I'm sober now, but I haven't committed to a lifetime of sobriety. And I don't know if you want to potentially cut that out or not. I don't know.
No, you be honest. It's good to hear.
I still have this hope that I can potentially, you know, at a special occasion toast to, you know, my brother and my sister-in-law when they get married. But again, I know it's a really slippery slope. So I don't know if that's something that I want to muck around with, or, you know, it's a hard one, because I know, please do say it.
Can I talk about it? Okay. Well, I mean, if we're going to, in the spirit of honesty, you know, when I hear that, I think, isn't that interesting? That there's, and it's almost like that conditioning that we have is still so powerful that you are mentally at one of the happiest times of your life.
Yeah.
You know, a wedding of your loved ones, celebrating with these humans, yeah. and you're thinking about the liquid.
I know,
your
you're blood. Right.
That's
you're
what
right.
gives it the power. And it's yeah. like, why? You know, that moment is about yeah. love That's, and connection
yeah, exactly.
and contentment and everything, not what you're, and just
you're
like
right.
being on the deck on a sunny day with the kids yeah. playing. That's about happiness. That's about the kids playing, the sun shining, the feeling that you're getting, not again. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I work this now for yeah. myself, because the truth yeah. of the matter is it, the power isn't in the glass. That moment no. is special because of that
true.
Moment.
It's very true. You're very, no, I mean, and that's the thing is, and that's one of the reasons why I haven't done anything about it yet, is because I'm still reconciling it in my head. I still feel like I'm still super early on in this journey. And like, whilst I might have some great perspective on alcohol, I still got to sort a lot of things out in my head, you know, when it comes
and
to that.
There are those who can, it's rare. Yeah. I will say it's rare. Oh. And the experts will tell you this, and I've heard it before. There are very occasionally people who can go from having a really problematic relationship to moderating, but yeah. it is very rare. And
yeah.
a lot of people try it because we all yeah. want, you know, I mean, I tried for years to moderate control.
Yeah.
So, you know, it, however your journey goes is how it goes. And who knows, maybe you will be one of those people, maybe you'll try it and you'll figure out you're not. And all of that's fine because it's
yeah,
a long
yeah.
journey and you'll get yeah. to where you feel. I mean, yeah. I have no doubt, Maria, the brilliant way that you are, and I love this about you, and that's one of the things I enjoy about following you online, but you have this really keen observation of yourself.
Yeah.
that nothing's going to slip under the radar with you, whatever's
like,
actually
great,
going on.
It's a great thing and a bad thing at the same time. I'm way too self-aware. But yeah, it's also a great space to be in as a parent, because it means that I can raise my children in an environment where they make an informed decision. Because obviously they're in a world here, especially in New Zealand, I'm not saying it's not like that around the world, but especially in New Zealand, where alcohol is treated and put it on a pedestal and treated like it's this most amazing elixir that makes your life great. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it with my children. I want them to know the reality of alcohol. And if they choose to do that, that is up to them. I don't want, because I feel like as a parent, if you tell someone not to do something, they're going to do it anyway. They'll just do it behind your back. But if they make an informed decision, perhaps that will help them a bit more than I had, which was nothing, you know?
Yeah, I can totally relate. There was no sense of alcohol having a dark side in my upbringing.
Yeah.
It was just presented like everything. And I've got teenagers now, and yeah. they are starting to drink. And
yeah.
it is a whole different ball game with the parenting.
Oh, man,
but, you know, at least I think, at least they know they've got a mum who doesn't drink because she can't control
yeah.
it. They've
yeah.
got a dad who does because he can.
Yeah.
And like you say, they've got a lifetime of trying to figure out their own relationship with
yeah.
this drug.
Yeah.
So, I
do like what I've seen online, and I know that things are changing. I'm not so knowledgeable when it comes to my kids' generation, but I do feel like sobriety is becoming more normalized. I've seen, you know, bars and stuff like that having sober nights, and I adore that. I applaud that. I think that's amazing. But there's also some part of me that's like, you're still in a bar, but that's okay. But, you know, whatever. I think that at the moment, especially here, the normal, I think we all know this, you're shunned if you're sober. You're shunned if you don't drink. It's not normal if you don't drink. You know, I've heard you say this many times before. It's the only drug that, you know, people think it's weird if you don't take it. And it's bizarre. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I think you're right. The tide is slowly turning. There's more people speaking out about it, but it's still...
Yeah.
pretty much a boozy culture. Well, look, you're amazing. Before we close, I'm interested, what do you drink now? So we're coming up to Christmas.
Mm.
What do you choose? You know, do you get anything special in to drink? What are your sort of go-to non-alcoholics?
As soon as I became sober, I didn't really do any kind of transference with non-alcoholic drinks or anything. I just do Coke Zero, a cup of coffee, sparkling water. My husband's plumbed in sparkling water into our house. So we have it on tap.
Jealous.
So just those things. I know there's a place in the market for non-alcoholic drinks, but I tend to just kind of stick to the basics.
Yeah, nice. So, me too. And there's, you know, nothing like slicing a fresh lime to put in your sparkling water.
Oh, love that. Love
that. How exciting. You are awesome. I'm so happy to have connected with you. Thank you for coming on and doing this sobriety chat with me, Maria. You know, I love your work. I'll put links to your sites, you know, when I embed this, and just keep up the great work with your everything that you do, but particularly your personal journey with regards to alcohol. And I wish you all the best.
Thanks a lot. Same to you.
Bye.